Hi, everybody. This is Special K, Kevin Latchford of the Black Flag Cast, and I am sitting today with Trammell Starks. Some of you may know was the musical mind behind a lot of the music of the Weather Channel in the 90s, especially a lot of those of us who get the channel known as WeatherScan. Mr. Starks, how are you doing today?
Hey, Kevin. Good to be talking to you.
Oh, marvelous. Would you like to tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. In terms of our conversation today, I've been a musician all my life. Started playing keyboards at a young age and was in my first rock band at 15. And like a lot of 15-year-old guys in rock bands, my goal was to be a rock star some way, somehow. And I played piano and organ, that sort of thing. Music by Santana and different, you know, music of the 70s. I'm a child of the 70s. So that's when it all started. I ended up going to school. I was a piano major in a small school in Georgia. And right after school, about 2 years after school, I was fortunate to get a call to sub for a keyboard player in the band of an R&B singer named Peebo Bryson. And Peebo was and is a great R&B singer, but he was notable. You may know him from some of the Disney animated films, theme songs. I think Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and a number of those big themes featured Peebo and other female artists, Celine Dion and others. So anyway, that was my first taste of being on a big stage. Prior to that, it had been, you know, club bands and that sort of thing. And although I wasn't, you know, what I would call an R&B musician, I was able to hang on to the job, and that led to a lot of other opportunities with some great singers. I was with Peebo for about 3 years, played on one album of his, and then just really, you know, got a chance to really great opportunities, had a lot of great opportunities in that association, just to play all over the country. In theaters and up to Madison Square Garden. I guess a highlight, the very first large gig I played with Peebo was also with Roberta Flack. And they had a song that was a hit back in the early 80s called Tonight I Celebrate My Love. And that was the tour that supported that album. And something I'll never forget, we played at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles, and backstage there were a number of famous musicians, most notably Miles Davis, and I got a chance to walk up to Miles and say hello to him. And actually, he stood backstage in the wings the entire show, so it was a kind of double terror for me. I was first time on a stage with A, famous singers, B, in front of 5,000 people, and C, there's Miles Davis standing about 15 feet to my left. So it was quite an experience, but I thought, well, I've got to at least say hello to Miles Davis because he's such an icon, and they'll, you know, be talking about him in history books in 200 years. And, you know, Miles had a reputation for being kind of cross at times, to put it mildly, but I thought, well, I got to at least speak to him. And so I did. He was polite. We had a very short conversation about synthesizers, and that was that. But anyway, as I said, spent about 3 years with Peebo. That led to a job with a fantastic singer named Jennifer Holliday, who had just come off the Dreamgirls play. She was the star of the original Dreamgirls on Broadway. And then she left Dreamgirls and started her own recording career. And I had met her during the Peebo tours. And she asked me to come and be in her band, and which was just a wonderful experience. And so I spent 5 years in her band. Did a tour with Patti LaBelle in the midst of all that. And so that was kind of took me up to through the late 80s. And then was hired by a record company based in north of Atlanta, Alpharetta, Georgia, which is where I live now, which is a suburb of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I got hired to be a staff producer for this label, and which I don't know that job description even exists anymore, but it did then. And that was really a great opportunity. And I consider that a real kind of watershed in my career, because I got to go into work every day and sit in a recording studio and learn recording. And so I did that for 10 or 12 years. And then Napster hit and record labels kind of took a dive, and I decided to go freelance, and have been doing that ever since. for probably 12 or 14 years. So that is, in a nutshell, maybe more info than you wanted, but that's my story. So.
Hey, stories are what this is all about. But for many of my audience, we might recognize you for something that you did some years ago, which is you were one of the chief composers for the local forecast music of the Weather Channel.
Yeah, I had that was a cool opportunity.
Did you get the gig, actually?
Well, starting in the early 90s, I actually lived close to the Weather Channel at the time, probably just a few miles from their offices. And I don't remember now how I actually met them, but I met some of the video producers there. And in those days, the work I did for them was scoring documentaries. So I used to sort of joke, it's not a funny thing, but every time there was a natural disaster, about 6 months later, I'd get a call, get a job out of it. But, you know, they would do, and they still do, I'm sure, you know, documentaries about hurricanes. You know, I remember doing one about Hurricane Andrew and Hurricane Aaron, I think it was, fires, El Nino, just all sorts of weather phenomena. They would do these documentaries, and I managed to get in a position to essentially be the guy that they would call to score the documentaries for them when they aired those. And so I did that for a number of years. And then one day I got a call from them asking if I could write some music for their local forecast segment. And I hadn't really paid a lot of attention to the local forecast segment, but apparently what had happened was they were using commercial music and were apparently not understanding that they needed to pay performance royalties to an organization called BMI, which is called Broadcast Music International, I think it is, or I don't know what the I stands for, but it's BMI. It's a huge company. And BMI is known as a performing rights association. And so BMI's job is to collect royalties when music is used in public, typically radio and TV and that sort of thing. So apparently the Weather Channel had not been paying their BMI royalties and apparently gotten some hot water with them over that. So they decided they wanted to have some proprietary music or some custom music for their local forecast segments that, you know, kind of absolved them of their BMI situation. And they asked me to write some music, and so we discussed it and ended up writing about 43 pieces, I think. I seem to have lost three or four of those, so I have 39 of them. I don't know whatever happened to the other four. But at any rate, so I did that, and starting in, I think, 1996, I believe it was in August of 96, they started playing my music exclusively, the songs I'd written for them, you know, pretty much around the clock. It was, I think, six times an hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 2 years. So that's the epitome of heavy rotation. You know, as artists, we all look for, or oftentimes we'll look for radio play. And radio play is divided up into categories. You can be in light rotation, medium rotation, or heavy rotation. And that's, depending on the genre, that refers to how many times a day your piece gets played. So these days, heavy rotation might be, you know, six times a day or so, depending on the genre. Well, to get played constantly for 2 years is sort of the epitome of heavy rotation. And so I really have to credit that with just the constant repetitive play as, you know, reaching so many people. And I'm fortunate to this day, you know, 15 years later of having, or 18 years later, having, you know, a fan base. You know, I get emails every week, it seems, people asking about the music, figuring out that I was the person behind it, and I'm really fortunate and thankful. I mean, I have to say, I did a lot of music through the 90s, still do. Again, in my job at the record company, I worked on literally hundreds of CD projects, and I don't get calls about any of those, but I get calls weekly about the Weather Channel music, and I'm really thankful for that.
And, I mean, what do you think about, you know, it being that this really popular music? I mean, there, I believe, several of your songs are in, I think, several different forms all over YouTube. Everybody, you know, really eats them up. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm really, really thankful, and I appreciate, you know, everyone that's reached out and been supportive and enthusiastic, and it's something that I'm really, really honored to have experienced.
And how were you inspired to create these songs? Like, what was like the ideas that kind of were in your head when you were creating them, the themes and such?
Well, it's funny. One thing I want to touch on: there are names attached to the song. Actually, mm-hmm. there are two sets of names, and I didn't name them. I don't know who did, but someone online, probably 10 years ago or more, attached names to them. And just as a quick aside, one of the persons who and again, I don't know, have any idea who did it. Most of the names are fine. There are a couple of names that someone attached to these that were pretty sophomoric. And I just want to say publicly, if anybody finds any of the names offensive, I apologize, but I had nothing to do with the names attached to them. Most of them are fine, but there are two or three that were, again, very sophomoric. And I'm sorry they weren't named what they were. But regardless, so back to inspiration. Well, two things about that. First of all, because of the way this music was presented, I wrote it in what I was thinking of as being sort of a modular form, in that in a lot of my music, I tend to have, you know, long introductions and a lot of transitions, and, you know, it's very meandering kind of a thing. In the Weather Channel music, I intentionally made them, again, what I call modular, in that there's changes, you know, pretty quickly. It doesn't sit on one thing very often, because I had no idea where in the song it was going to be picked up on the local forecast. And I didn't want it to just sit there for, you know, if it was a 30-second broadcast or a 30-second, you know, playtime or whatever, I didn't want it to be in the middle of a 30-second introduction that didn't go anywhere musically.